again, you can do so next Monday afternoon when it forms our Proms Repeat programme in Afternoon on 3. That's next Monday from 2. Or, of course, if you have the internet, you can listen online anytime you'd like to for the next 7 days on the iPlayer Radio, which you can find on the Radio 3 website or the very easy-to-use and free-to-download app. Full details about that also on the Radio 3 website. So, yes, back to the Albert Hall in just under, 45 minutes' time for that late prom from Django Bates. He last appeared at the proms 26 years ago, so find out what's new at 10:15 tonight. And in between times, a chance to hear the composer of the piece receiving its world premiere at that first prom tonight, Andrew McGregor, in conversation with the German composer Charlotte Seiter in just a moment.
Tone poems by Richard Strauss, Bantok and Sibelius, live from the BBC Proms. I'm Christopher Cook. Join me as Vladimir Yurovsky and the London Philharmonic Orchestra trace the development of one of music's most flexible and imaginative forms. Friday night at the BBC Proms from 7:30.
Well, later tonight on Radio 3, a form of music which has slowly but surely gained a reputation and indeed a standard, the music that accompanies video games, is given some high-profile attention in Late Junction this week with Nick Luscombe. He also features tracks from Aphex Twin, folk music from Nick Jones and much more besides. That's at 9:45 tonight after our late prom. But now, as I say, it's time for another Proms Composer Portrait, which actually took place earlier this evening at the Royal College of Music in London. It's introduced by Andrew McGregor.
Composer Charlotte Seiter tells us in the programme note that she's written for her new piece in this evening's prom that voices are wonderful. They're deeply rooted in the human soul and they always tell the truth. They never lie. What, Charlotte, never?
Yes, even if they lie, they tell the truth of lie.
I think you need to elaborate on that a little.
Yes, it's wonderful. I think that the voice is so deeply rooted to our emotions, so it's so difficult if you have a special emotion to hide it in your voice. And if you hear somebody who is hurt by something, the voice will tell it to you. And if he tries to convince you from something which is contrary to the real feeling, you can so often feel it as well in the voice, that the voice tries to play a theater or the voice tries to do anything which is the contrary from that. And I really like the way in which the voice is not changeable of a person, and it's so true related to the soul and to all the inner things which are important to say and which are important to feel.
And so this is the idea of the, well, I think you call it the shadow around a voice, which tells the truth regardless of what the words are actually saying.
Yes, yeah. We often have the words as well in the pieces we hear in the evening. The words tell something, but the voice is the truth and not what is told in the words of voice. If I say I want to search for my words and I do it in that language, in the sentence, I want to search my voice, of course it doesn't make sense. It makes sense to show a music in which the person tries to find the voice or to lose the voice or something like that. So I really make a big difference between the things which the text is saying in general and the things how the voice behaves. And I do not trust text at all. I only trust the music. I only trust the diction of the singer. I only trust the honesty of the voice as an instrument, of the voice as as part of human being.
The first piece we're going to hear also has, well, it does have a literary inspiration, doesn't it? Because you're setting a text from Kafka.
Yes, it was a commission for a Kafka festival where I was asked whether I would like to think about Kafka. And I said, yes, but give me time. I just want to think about whether I can get in a relationship with this author because his language is so special And even if German is your mother language, Kafka is extremely anti-musical in a special way because he makes so long sentences and he has so a complicated structure of putting the parts of the sentence and the chromatic insight. So my first impression was Kafka is the one author which is the first which is impossible to work about. And then I thought that I would want to think what could be my solution. And I read a lot of texts of Kafka and I decided immediately it does not make sense to take a poem or to take any prose of him and to make a mimetic exegesis of this as a composer. It's more beautiful to take a fragment and to let it vibrate and to let this fragment circle inside of the head of the singer and to look what happens then. And so I used the text of Kafka, but I wouldn't say that these pieces are compositions about Kafka. It's my music and I use Kafka, but the things which then happen are not really the authentic Kafka. It's a transposition in something contemporary. It's the transposition in the head of a lady, in the head of a singer, in something which is a little bit more outside of Kafka, but meeting Kafka on another point.
And, well, the title, Mince Meisel. I know Meisel is a chisel, isn't it? It's a sort of stonemason's chisel. Mince, mint?
Yes. I invented this word. It doesn't exist. Kafka uses the word Hitzenagel, German, which doesn't exist in the German language as well. And it's an amalgamation of heat and nail.
Nail.
Yes. And he always had the idea in the text to feel the moment before a nail is treated inside your head and you just feel the fear, the incredible fear. So it doesn't happen. It's just the moment before.
And
only the moment before.
And I'll attempt to translate the text and then we need to get the players on and hear the piece for ourselves. So the text translates, I think, as felt at the temple as the wall feels the tip of the nail that will be driven into it. So let's hear the piece. And let's welcome our first performers to perform Mince Meisel, three small songs for voice and piano by Charlotte Zeiter, Katrina Morrison, and Ed Cohen.
Fühlt es an der Schläfe, wie Why, Peter, it's a knuckle. It's a knuckle, knuckle. It's a knuckle, knuckle. It's a knuckle, knuckle.
Mintzmeissel, a Kafka fragment set in the form of three small songs by Charlotte Zeiter, performed for us here at the Royal College of Music by mezzo Katrina Morrison and pianist Ed Cohen. And anyone expecting a conventional piano sound would have been rather startled by some of the effects that Ed managed to get out of the instrument. There's a packet of lentils wrapped in a flannel held together with an elastic band towards the top end of the instrument. Two rough clothes or shoe brushes as well, an espresso cup used as a bottleneck on the strings, and some really interesting techniques. Now, Charlotte, that's dedicated to one of your composition teachers, Aribert Reimann, on his 70th birthday. Mm. Now, like you, he's a fine pianist and someone who loves working with voices as well. So what was the essence of that relationship with him as a teacher? What did he bring out in your music?
I think Aribert Reimann and me, we met about the voice, and that was the reason why we met. Mm. So I really felt attracted from his music, and it came by chance that he could hear a piece of mine, and so he invited me to show him pieces. And then it was clear that it wouldn't just be that we meet once and I would show pieces, so we had a close working process together for a longer time. And it was very important for me because of this rooting in the thinking of voice, and because it's so natural for him to think music in the first moment as something human, as something vocal. So even if you have a flute tone, it has two arms, and it's jumping, and it's breathing, and it's behaving like a human who is doing something like a human. And this was a point where we very fast got a common language together. So he was the teacher of mine, teachers where it was not necessary to explain myself. He just saw the scores and he immediately understood what I wanted to say. And he said one sentence about that, and this sentence was for me really bread to work, to go on with the works, and to felt me really understood.
Well, you talked about the idea that the flute doesn't just make a note, there's a whole process which leads up to it, and you're very interested in exploring that in the same way that we just heard you working with the voice in a similar way. And the next piece we're going to hear is for solo flute. It's the title translates as Alone with the Shadows, and it's a different kind of commission, this, isn't it? Because there were it was a commission for a large number of composers.
Yes, it was commissioned to the birthday of Friedrich der Große von Preußen in Germany, who was a famous flutist, and the Academy of Rheinsberg, where Friedrich was very celebrated for this jubilee, decided to give commissions to a lot of composers, to 70 composers, because how much composers was
it? I think there are 70
yes,
in the book, aren't
I think there were 70. And maybe you know the solfeggio book Friedrich wrote as a composer himself with small etudes for flute. And so the organizers said, we want to have a solfeggio book again, but with contemporary composers, and each composer has one solfeggio and can do something about that. And I said, okay, I do not feel the relationship in making rework of a solfeggio of Friedrich, but I would write a piece which has nothing to do with the solfeggio. I got one as a reference point, but I said, I just can do it, this commission, if I can completely deny it, and if I can write a personal piece which deals on another point, which deals on the loneliness of Friedrich der Große, on his always being in relationship with his flute and of his psychological state of feeling soul, feeling alone, and always being persecuted by his shadows himself. And so I wrote this piece which always has an impulse and ends in a field of very soft whistle tones. And we have always the same litany in a special way of tones which repeat in this short, short melody, but they are always breaking with different techniques, so you do not feel it in the first moment. It is always the same melodic pattern which happens, and it always ends in that field of whistle tones which you cannot really control until the last moment. You just do something with your mouth and any harmonics come or do not come, and this was the point I really liked. To end in that open listening situation.
I also like the instructions. There are so many instructions and there's so much detail. And you say to the player, jet whistle, and a little description. Then think of a crescendo while breathing out. So you're telling the player to think as well as how to breathe. I mean, this is this is micro control.
Yes, I'm not interested in all these technical aspects to do technical aspects. I just need sound. I just need a special sound. And this sound is not usual in the flute literature. Of course, it's usual, meanwhile, in the contemporary flute literature. But I need the gesture. I need the sound. I need the expression behind. And for that, it is a pity that it's necessary to write such a lot of things in the foreword, in the preface of pieces like this, because the normal tones do not, they are not enough. They do not transport the things I want to transport.
But something which fascinates me about it is that you've got all this detail, you've got all this information, and it's a great deal for a player to assimilate and to actually learn for themselves. But then there still seems to be room for the personality of the player as well.
You just learn the techniques, and when you learn the techniques, it's like when you learn a language, you learn words, you learn grammatical structures, but then you have to speak in your own language. And this is the same thing. Also, it is notated quite precise. There are so much moments in that piece where she can take a little time and take her own weight of body. And I want to see her individuality and not mine. It's not my purpose to double myself. It's my purpose to to write something and to have the interpreter, which is doing this with his eyes, so that something third is coming out, which is more than me and more than the interpreter.
And in this case, the interpreter also has to some extent, step into the shoes of Frederick the Great, or at least the idea of Frederick the Great as a flautist. And you tell the player to cast shadows, as part of one of the instructions at the top of the piece, which I rather like. So, here to perform Charlotte Zeiter's flute study, Seul avec des ombres, Alone with the Shadows, please welcome Lee Holland.
Thank you.
Seul avec des ombres, Alone with the Shadows. Lee Holland there played Charlotta Zeiter's contribution to the flute book for Frederick the Great, 70 Rheinsberg solfeggios by different composers assembled for his 300th anniversary last year. Now, did you explore any of the other composers' offerings in the book? Because the range is absolutely fascinating.
Yes, I found it was a wonderful idea to invite composers of very different écritures, of very different handwritings. And so it's really a collection of the German writing for flute at the moment. So you really had pieces which referred quite closely to the solfeggi, to Friedrich. We had the regulation that the piece shouldn't be longer than 3 minutes. So it shouldn't be a large etude or something like that. So it just should be a miniature of 3 minutes, like the solfeggi, and it's a wonderful collection of handwritings of different German composers.
A lot of material for any flautist to explore, yes. I think. It's fascinating. Now, Charlotte, there doesn't seem to be, and we sometimes get this with composers when we're talking like this about their music, you feel that there's quite a division between the way in which they think about writing for small forces, for chamber forces, and the way in which they think about writing for the orchestra and for the big piece in the prom that they've written. There doesn't seem to be the same kind of division with you. It feels as though there's something very consistent about the way in which you think about the music, regardless of the scale.
Yes, I think it's more something which is just a graduation. So voice is graduating into something instrumental, and the instrumental things, chamber music, is graduation flowing into the orchestra piece. And also, I feel it in a special way in the temporary aspect. Maybe I could say that all the pieces I did, they are in a logical development, or they all cling to things which or they develop an idea further, and the next piece is on the same red line, but it's developing again something on. So I do not think so much in separate categories. I think more in general ordered things, in fluent development and in fluent increasings and in fluent learnings, so that each piece is learning from other pieces. So in the way I use the flute in orchestral pieces or something like that, is the logical going further, like the processes I did in the flute before. So everything is always in the fluent situation, in the process, in the learning. That's the most interesting thing, learning.
And also, you don't seem to be hidebound by categories. Your first two operas, I mean, one of them, Others Self, is quite a large piece, and then your second opera is just for one woman, one woman's voice, and handheld percussion, so it doesn't matter to you, as long as it's theatrical.
Yes, yes. So I do not cling to categories like this, so I try to find, to define my categories for myself. When I wrote this piece, this opera for one voice, and she does everything on her self. She's the orchestra, she's all the soloists, and she has to sing like with a button put, and she changes it to another person, and she changes back to the first person, and she changes again to another person, and she must to imagine who the persons are, because they are not on stage. You just can imagine them by your voice and by your body, and that is theater, that you have got the imagination of five persons being present and nobody's present. You just see one person, but this one person has to create the atmosphere, five people calling to each other. And these are things I really like, because they are so closely related to the original idea of theater, to the original idea of opera, and to the original idea of covering things and of wearing another clothes and being another person, like the tradition of the opera you had in earlier times.
Let me ask you about the third piece we're going to hear, because there seems to be the ghost of some ancient Italian music at work behind this. It's Waters, Earth and Air One. It's the earliest of the pieces we're hearing this evening, from 1997. It barely has a text at all, but they are Italian words. And it's as though there's the ghost of an Italian madrigal hovering in the background or something like that.
Yes, at first it's the situation that Italian language fascinates me extremely, because it helps the body so much to sound wonderful when you sing. Each singer, when he sings Italian, the body has a wonderful system of resonance. So I like it a lot to have the gesture of this language, because each singer likes to use Italian words, because it opens the head, it opens all the technical things you need in your body. And the second thing is that this Italian language is often related to me quite strong as well in the orchestra piece, to the tradition of Monteverdi and of ancient music, and of having the idea of a tone which is very long and which is instrumental in a special way. Of course, you have got a lot of bloomings before when you come inside the tone or something like that. But in this piece, I mean, I need a special lamento, which is extremely discreet, which is extremely hidden, which is extremely under the surface. But I like that the Italian language always gives us so much impressions which are before the language, before the consciousness, before we express the things in words.
So again, we're close to focusing on the words, but it's what happens around them that's almost more important than itself.
In this piece, I didn't had, this was the first piece which I wrote in a speckle technique, that it's a piece with ensemble and voice, and I didn't choose a text before when I started. I just began to compose and to write the score, and in each moment I decided what needs the voice now. I didn't know it one bar before, but now I thought, what needs the voice now? And I decided she needs ma, sha, or something like this. And so I found it myself, the text, as one parameter of the music composition in the act of composing. And I gave the singer the words and the sounds which she needed to make the music I wanted to do. So I didn't decide to express something, a lyrical structure in a special way, or a poem, or some sentence with a semantic message. I just decided that the voice behaves in a special way, and for that I needed to go. Something percussion-like, ideas like this. And it wasn't possible to have a poem which really gave me exactly the things I needed now for the music, for the process, for going on. And so I was my own, you cannot say poet like this. I gave the voice, the music, the text, which brought out the music as the right music it is. And the interesting thing is, after this process, it's interesting for me to see, when the piece has then been finished, what did I write? If then I add and I write down all the things I found, it's often amazing that they make sense in a way I didn't plan before. And there are messages hidden inside them. She's singing Lasciamo, Lasciamo, Lasciamo. So it's always the gesture of a desire, and it has a relationship to Monteverdi, to old madrigals, to the art of old madrigal vocal singing. And I didn't discover that in the moment when I was writing it.
So
it was just afterwards.
Later.
I was a little bit shocked about my own truth, but that is the cope with voice. That is the moment which is very interesting in composing, that you, in a special way, do not know what you do, and in another way, you know absolutely exactly what you do.
So let's hear it. To perform Water, Earth and Air 1 by Charlotta Zeiter, please welcome our ensemble from the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, mezzo Katrina Morrison, with Ed Cohen, Lee Holland, Heather Nicol, Joe Bostock, Glyn Forrest and conductor Fergus MacLeod.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Waters, Earth and Air One by Charlotte Zeiter, performed by mezzo Katrina Morrison, pianist Ed Cohen, flautist Lee Holland, clarinetist Heather Nicol, percussionist Joe Bostock and Glyn Forrest, and conductor Fergus MacLeod, all from the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland in Glasgow. Thanks to all of them for making the journey and for working so hard at these complex and delicate scores. Thanks to the Royal College of Music for having us, for the audience here in the hall, and most of all, for this last Proms Composer Portrait of the Season to composer Charlotte Zeiter. Lovely to meet her.
And that Proms Composer Portrait was recorded earlier this evening and introduced by Andrew McGregor. Stay with us on Radio 3 in just a moment. We'll be across the road again for a late prom at the Royal Albert Hall.
On BBC Radio 4, John Hume, Maya Angelou, Ndileka Mandela, Doreen Lawrence, Malala Yousafzai, Joan Baez, Mary Robinson, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Leading campaigners for civil rights and justice around the world read Martin Luther King's iconic speech in full.
I have a dream.
I have a dream.
I have a dream.
I have a dream.
I have a dream today.
1963 is not an end, but a beginning.
I Have a Dream on BBC Radio 4, tomorrow morning at 9.
This, though, is BBC Radio 3, and it's now a quarter past 10. At a quarter to 12 tonight, Nick Luscombe introduces tonight's Late Junction. But now, from the stage of the Royal Albert Hall here in London, here's Jez Nelson with the second of this evening's proms.
Hello and welcome to this year's Late Night Jazz Prom, which is live here on BBC Radio 3, the home of the proms. As he describes in the programme notes for tonight's concert, Django Bates' love affair with Charlie Parker began at an early age. His dad gave him the pioneering saxophonist biography to read when he was just 12, and obsession set in. He even rather sweetly modelled a mini Parker out of plasticine. Well, four decades on, the romance continues, and the music we'll hear tonight is the latest expression of Django's fantastically original reimaginings of Parker's classic compositions and original works inspired by his beloved bird. We'll hear more from Django about his hero as the night goes on, but Charlie Parker, who died at just 34, some 58 years ago, was unquestionably one of jazz's most important figures. His compositions and playing style helped define bebop and, in turn, all jazz that followed it. Django Bates himself is one of modern jazz's finest composers and group leaders. His 80s big band Loose Tubes launched the careers of many of the UK's current finest players. In fact, Django's last appearance at the Proms was way back in 1987 with Loose Tubes, the first ever jazz orchestra to be afforded the honour of a prom. Tonight he's back with another large group already on stage behind me, the Norbotten Big Band, who claim to be the world's northernmost professional big band, hailing as they do from just south of the Arctic Circle in Sweden. They join Django's regular beloved trio with Dane Peter Brun on drums and Swede Petter Eld on bass. With a celebration of Charlie Parker, please welcome Django Bates.
Thank you very much. It's an amazing experience to be presenting Charlie Parker's music at the proms. Really special. And about an hour ago, I was sitting underneath this stage and Stravinsky was leaking through. I was underneath the French horns and I got them and everything that was low, the rumble of the timps and the contrabass. It was otherworldly. And it reminded me that Stravinsky went to see Charlie Parker play at Birdland in 1951 or something. And Parker saw Stravinsky sitting in the corner and quoted from Stravinsky's Firebird. And Stravinsky, it's known, slammed his drink down on the table in delighted amusement. Why would Stravinsky go to see Charlie Parker? Well, that piece is probably part of the answer. It's at its heart, it's a blues in F, but it has loads of F sharps, plenty of G's, lots of G sharps, tons of A's, because he's a happy guy, Charlie Parker. B flat, B, C, C sharp, D. Weirdly enough, not so many E flats, even though that's the bluesy note. I don't know. Lots of E naturals, it's the whole thing, and Stravinsky would certainly have dug that. Now we'd like to play Laura, beautiful theme from a film noir called Laura, which Charlie Parker loved and played often.